Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. And I'm David Todd. Season 2, episode 108, Dave. A little bit of a summer quiet period here. We're going to have a couple more OTAs coming up and then the mini camps in June. But right now, not a ton of news out there on the Steelers or league-wide. A couple news and notes we'll go through, but a little bit of a downtime for us. But I know you've been going through your positional rankings, and we're going to get into some of that over the next few episodes.
Yeah, I guess first and foremost, we'll throw the dates back out for everybody. The next OTA for the Steelers would be May 22nd through the 24th, so that'll be a week from today. That's followed up by another OTA, I believe, on the 29th through the 31st. And then another OTA June 4th through the 7th. Now, of course, they had the rookie mini camp already, and another rookie mini camp, I think, is on the books for June 12th through the 14th. Before we get into some of these breakdowns, you know, the interesting thing that Mike Florio had up on Pro Football Talk regarding some of the first rounders, the late first rounders, of course, David DeCastro and Sean Spence are the only two draft picks yet to be signed for the Steelers. Sean Spence, that deal should come along at any time now. You know, it might just be an issue of him getting back up there and signing that contract. But the thing with David DeCastro, as Florio pointed out, is, you know, the holdup is, David, on these four-year guarantees. And, you know, last year I think it went through pick 20 that the top draft picks there up until pick 20 had all 4 years of their first contracts guaranteed. Now, of course, there was some haggling, I think, with 21 and 22 in there with Phil Taylor, I think, the Browns being at 22, getting some sort of deal worked out where, you know, he would have some sort of roster bonus involved in that fourth year. So basically it was a three-year guaranteed and has an early out of some sorts with that roster bonus. But what you're seeing this year is these agents are trying to drag down the line for these four-year guarantees. And, you know, the next one on the books, I think, that has to be signed, I know Shea McClellan from the Bears is signed, so I think Kendall Wright is the 20th overall selection. So he should, you know, based on last year's signing, should get a four-year deal. Now, after that, you know, will the Patriots draw the line in the sand with Chandler Jones? So no one above David DeCastro has signed up until Shea McClellan, so we're waiting for everybody to draw the line in the sand to see how far down these four-year guaranteed contracts work.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Interesting stuff. Just to follow up on just what happened with Phil Taylor, everybody knows a very successful rookie year. He is now out with his torn pectoral. That was confirmed. He is supposed to have his surgery tomorrow. So we've talked about some of the blows around the league. But just to keep people updated, on the injury front, Phil Taylor's going to have surgery on his pectoral muscle tomorrow, 4 to 6 months kind of for that kind of recovery. You want to be fully recovered, obviously, if you come back at a defensive tackle, nose tackle, and get involved in the trenches. So he is borderline, and you got to figure with the roster spot issues, even if they put him on PUP, probably unlikely to see Phil Taylor this week. Dave, before we get back into the positional stuff, the other kind of injury news around the league, the left tackle for the Eagles, Jason Peters, who had ruptured his Achilles in activities, was at home. He's had his surgery about 3 weeks, a month ago. He had some kind of device I hadn't heard about before that allowed him some mobility. I guess it was a rolling device. It somehow malfunctioned. This all happened yesterday, I think. He re-ruptured his Achilles tendon. He's now definitely going to be out for the year, and in fact, he's gone so far as to sue the maker of the apparatus that he was using in his house. So just a quick update on the
And you just told me, I missed that when it came across and all like that. I guess they're calling it what, a freak accident. And how does this thing work? What is it, like a skate almost? Or
I assume that's right. It's a rolling device, and I don't know if it collapsed or it didn't roll, but he went down in his kitchen. And I imagine there were more than a few choice words at the moment in time when he realized he.
I hate to laugh, when you have a vision in your head like that, you're wondering, and makes you wonder, how can he sue? I mean, I guess, I don't know, the world we live in, you can sue anybody for anything nowadays, but, it was going to be tough for him to get back anyway. And that's why they signed, Bell from the. With the Bills and all like that, but
it's called a rollabout, and the device, malfunctioned. He fell on his face and ruptured his Achilles again. I mean, he's going to sue the manufacturer. That's kind of from the NFL.com story from Greg Rosenthal. Demetrius Bell, they had signed. I'm not sure we would have seen Peters, but I think this pretty much makes it a done deal.
Yeah, absolutely. That's interesting. I hope he had the clapper on him or whatnot. So, I hate to make light of that. I mean,
look, this is a guy. Nobody died here. This guy ruptured his Achilles, and he did it a month after he did it. So, on the big picture of things, this isn't. There are a lot. If we're going to laugh about something, this is probably close to acceptable.
Yeah. Could you imagine if Roethlisberger had something like that happening? Happen to him? Twitter would shut down. Kind of real quick, finishing up on these contracts things. How long do you think it's going to be before we see the entire first round, 4 years guaranteed?
I wouldn't be surprised if that happens in the next year, next 2 years. It's one of those things where you're not really, you got to think as a team, you're not giving up much. But if you're picking 32nd or you're picking 31st, obviously, if you have the opportunity to potentially save a couple million dollars by being able to waive a guy without having his money guaranteed, you'd like to have that option in your back pocket. But at the same time, you certainly hope you're not missing on your first-round pick where the guy's not on your roster 4 years into his career. So, catch 22. I'm sure the teams in the league would like to have it. This is something that if I'm an agent, you go to the mat for your guys and see what you can do. But in the CBA, I don't know exactly how the language is written in terms of the guarantees. So I'm surprised that it's left open to speculation, or if a certain number needed to be guaranteed, or what that is. So I'm less clear on that part of it.
Yeah, I think it's just the agents are wanting more and more in any situation. So I'm with you. It's not going to be too long before we have the 4 year guarantees throughout the first round, and then they'll slowly start trying to, I'm sure, eating away at the second round as things move on here. But to give a little idea of what we can expect, I fully expect the deal for DeCastro to still be only 3 years of it guaranteed. Comparing him to Cameron Jordan, who was a 24th overall selection last year by the Saints, he received a 4 year, $7.73 million contract. 3 years of that were guaranteed, and it included a 4.12 signing bonus. So the DeCastro deal will come in somewhere in that neighborhood. If they want anybody to draw a line in the sand as far as these four-year guaranteed contracts are, if it were to sneak down to DeCastro, I'm willing to bet the Steelers will be more than happy to be the ones to draw that line in the sand with him as far as that goes. But on to kind of talking about some of these positional things, I've been writing up, going position by position, kind of a post-draft look at where the Steelers stand at some of these things. And yesterday I got to the receivers in one post, and then the tight ends and the fullbacks in another post. And I think the wide receivers, I think you and I would agree that, that's a pretty clear-cut thing outside of the top four, and whether or not, Tony Clemens makes it as the fifth, and if they decide to keep six, would a guy like Marquise Mays, more of a specialist, grab that spot? We've kind of said all along that the Steelers, wide receiver depth chart would be four guys, five guys, and Chris Rainey, and I think we'll be saying that all summer long here. But when you get to the tight ends, David, You know, let me ask you, how concerned are you? You know, of course, Heath Miller, I mean, that guy speaks for himself, but how concerned are you about the depth behind Heath Miller at the tight end position?
I don't know. I guess I'm less concerned than most. I think Leonard Pope is serviceable in the role that he's going to play. Again, you and I have a different view than most of, or at least than some of the beat writers about Wesley Saunders' role. I'm not ready to put Wesley Saunders in the Hall of Fame, but I think we both think that the guy has some real talent. If the Steelers were concerned about this Adderall thing, they would have done something about it. If it was a character issue or a drug issue that was an addiction problem that they thought was really out of bounds, they would have made that move immediately. They didn't. So, you know, we're going to see Wesley Saunders on the reserve suspended list for the first four games. He won't count against a roster spot, which has been reported mistakenly a few times. So with him there, with Pope, with David Johnson having some kind of role, and with Paulson, look, they don't have the heir apparent to Heath Miller on the roster. But, you know, you play the NFL, you can't have the guy that you assume is going to be the next guy for every position there to go. And the Steelers don't have it at inside linebacker, and they don't have it at tight end. But I think the depth at tight end is probably a little better than the depth at inside linebacker. And I think those guys, if they're not asked to replace Heath Miller, if they're asked to be the second, third, fourth tight ends, play special teams, what they have is fine. Now, then you ask the question, if Heath Miller's hurt, well, if Heath Miller's hurt, you got a problem. And you can go around the league and you can find positions, and you can find it most principally at the quarterback position. Teams don't have the guy who's going to be the next guy. So I think the Steelers do have that in a lot of positions, tight ends, a position where they don't have it.
Leonard Pope, I tell you, you know, the guy just never has lived up to you know, kind of his billing coming out of Georgia there, I don't think. I mean, he's got great size. It's just he's never been, you know, a great blocker. I mean, you watch the tape on him over the years with the Chiefs and the Cardinals, and he just has not been in that class of a solid inline blocker tight end the way the Steelers, you know, have used Heath Miller over the years. And as far as pass catching, too, look, this guy has not set the world on fire. He recorded, I think, 24 receptions for the Chiefs last season, and that was a career best for him. So, you know, I've said all along, since, you know, I thought the Steelers, of course, would maybe address the tight end position a little bit earlier in the draft, and Pope was signed as insurance before the draft, just in case, you know, they weren't able to do that. But to me, this guy is not the answer. I mean, it's a one-year deal, and it was, you know, a qualifying contract on top of it, which means they're not married to him. But at the same time, I believe his contract is guaranteed if he's on the roster week one with these veterans and all. So
Right. That's going to be the case, yep.
So, you know, I think they're hoping that somebody can beat him out. Boy, Wesley Saunders really threw a wrench into this thing, because if he's not suspended these first four games, then it makes, you know, in my opinion, it makes Pope more expendable there, because I think Saunders, I mean, let's face it, the kid only played, you know, less than 250 snaps last year. He didn't have the OTA or the mini camps or anything like that to help him out, you know, with the transition and all like that. He'll have all that this year, and he'll be able to, you know, participate in all of the training camp and all the preseason games. He'll just have to miss the first four games. But, you know, if you know, I think now you're at the point where you almost have to keep Pope on the roster unless another free agent comes, you know, comes free with these camp cutdowns and all. The guy I think that, and it was nice that Jonathan Dwyer told us this the other day in his interview, you know, both David Johnson and Will Johnson, I think he said, were the ones that are being considered mostly as fullbacks and in the fullback meetings there. Neither one of these guys are great inline tight ends. I think Will Johnson probably has the ability to be a better inline tight end than, say, David Johnson. But Will, of course, is a converted wide receiver, and the film on him at WVU is very exciting, but it's mostly him out of the backfield and blocking out of the backfield as well, too. So I wouldn't call David Johnson a lock just because he's on a one-year tender that he signed. And Paulson, who knows what we have here, but this guy definitely was not drafted. He was drafted for his hands more than he definitely was with his blocking. So I would say that there's some concern at the position. I know a lot of people are on the West Lyons bandwagon because of his size and all like that. But, look, this kid doesn't have a chance in hell at making this 53-man roster, in my opinion, and would really be a stretch, really have to show something to make the practice squad as well. So, I mean, I think there's some concern at the depth of this position behind Heath Miller, and I would really be troubled if Heath Miller was to go down for an extended period of time.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page. I mean, if Heath Miller's playing, the guy's there, you know, to fill roles, and with Wesley Saunders back after week four, I think it's adequate. It's certainly not what you'd like to be, and I think, you know, if we're going to talk about the two other positions where that's the case now, you're going to point to straight to inside linebacker. You're probably going to go right behind that position and go to safety and say that's the other position where maybe you're going to question the depth if a guy goes down. And we've seen both Ryan Clark and Troy Polamalu get hurt in the past couple of years, and the Steelers haven't done anything to really address that. Of course, Ryan Mundy's there. They have guys, you know, who can fill roles. But, you know, with a 53-man roster and a salary cap, you don't get to be the Steelers of the 70s where you're too deep, or, you know, be Nebraska or Oklahoma of the 70s where, you know, you just roll out your second team and you're going to thump whoever you play to because you're too deep's better than anybody else's first team. So, you know, it is a point of concern. There's no doubt when we sit and talk about the 2013 NFL draft, a year from now, when Dave and I are starting this conversation 9.5, 10 months from now, that if the Steelers' roster is constructed how it is today and it goes through the season as expected, the first 2 points of conversation, first 3 points of conversation are going to be inside linebacker, safety, and tight end.
Yeah, tight end most definitely. I mean, of course, Heath Miller will be 30 and all like that, and we'll know more about what Wesley Saunders is or isn't this upcoming season. I really see the kid probably being in the 500 snap category this year and all like that. But, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, you're going to have to start thinking that. Now, the inside linebacker position, the jury, I think, still out because of the Stevenson Sylvester. We'll know for sure what he is or isn't this year. And, with the kid Sean Spence, you know, maybe down the line, is this a guy who you know, can take on that buck role, the leader of the defense, you know, heading forward? I mean, the guy has a quick seat to do. As Mike Tomlin has pointed out, the kid evidently had a great rookie camp, a few weeks ago there. So, you know, maybe this kid is an answer, you know, long term there, but there are question marks there right now after the draft, as with safety as well too, and you know, like you said, Ryan Mundy, okay, well, this is a guy that can come in at a pinch and play both those, both strong safety and free safety. You got Cromartie, who is going to try to buck for a position of depth this year. Myron Rowe, is this kid dedicated? Does he have enough? We definitely know he has the smarts to play the position. Does he have the ability to play the position and back up that spot as well, too? So, yeah, I'm with you. This time next year, we'll be talking tight end, very possibly middle linebacker, and most definitely safety.
Yeah, and and Dave, I guess we'll have a better answer about if you're going to throw a fourth position in there. The next obvious position probably would be running back, but that is so up in the air right now because we don't know about Mendenhall and what his performance will be, and obviously his contract situation. Redmond's going to get a chance to maybe be the lead sled dog for a little bit of this early part of the season if Mendenhall's on the PUP, and then we don't know what we have in John Dwyer and John Clay. And, again, thanks to Jonathan Dwyer for the interview he did a week ago. That was really good stuff. Those two guys are out there to prove themselves. And then the young guys, you know, how Rainey's never going to be a lead back and Baron Batson never going to be a lead back, but they both potentially play roles. So, you know, that is that's probably the position where it seems like there might be the talent, but the Steelers are probably less certain about what kind of talent's going to be there. That probably as much as any position on the team is open to judgment, as I guess cornerback is, because there's so much youth there with the three guys in Lewis and the two kids, Brown and Allen, drafted last year.
Yeah, and the thing with Mendenhall, people got to keep in mind, I think a few people are under the the understanding that they could tender Mendenhall, and that's not the case. Mendenhall's in the final year of his rookie deal, and he's going to be a an unrestricted free agent. So the only way you're going to the only way they're going to keep Mendenhall is if they reach some sort of long-term deal with him, and it's going to be in his best interest coming off, coming off the injury first and foremost, and second of all, you know, let's face it, how many snaps is he likely to get towards the end of the season? And of course, me and you have gone back.
People probably aren't ready. not ready to hear us page World War III again yet.
Yeah, but okay, you know, it all depends on the time that he plays, plain and simple. You know, yeah. You're not going to give a guy, a 3-year deal for big money that doesn't play a predominant amount of snaps coming off that injury. So
that's a big part of my argument, that he has huge incentive to be ready to, because his money is going to be dependent on how much he plays.
Absolutely. But at the same time, we know how thrifty, I don't want to use the word cheap, even though it's a better adjective, the Steelers are when it comes to, you know, comes to contracts. And I think they view the running back position as a very fungible one anyway. And the other thing about Redmond is, you know, he was an exclusive free agent this past off season. He had no choice but to sign his 1-year exclusive tender. But he'll be a restricted free agent next year. So if he has the type of year that they hope that he has, he can be signed to another 1-year, you know, restricted tender, and then possibly a long-term deal after that. Or they could, approach the position more than likely in the draft as well, too. Jonathan Dwyer is entering the final year of his rookie deal this year. So, like you said, we don't know John Clay, although he first carry one touchdown. We don't know too much about the guy outside of that on the field, because both he and Dwyer, I think, had under 30 snaps on offense last year as well, too. So there'll be a lot of feeling out this year as far as the running back position goes, especially if Mendenhall does start the season on the PUP list.
Yeah, and David, it'll be interesting. There's a lot of talk about how, Merrill Hodge was on ESPN yesterday, and Merrill's a bit bombastic, a former Steeler. He's got a lot of insight, and he's got some good things to say. One of the good things he said yesterday was, you hear a lot, and this was in relation to an OTA or a rookie mini camp that happened in Seattle. Seattle talked about that. You know, Pete Carroll's is as upbeat and optimistic coach and guy as you'll ever be around. And whatever you think of what he did with the USC program, he's done some good things in the community. He's gone up to Seattle, and you can't say they've been great, but I think they've been a little better than expected, and they've turned the roster over, and they clearly have a philosophy up there that they don't give a F what anybody thinks of their drafting philosophy. They're going to take the guys they want. So they took the kid from West Virginia, Irvin, with the 15th pick, which surprised a lot of people. The other kid they took is Russell Wilson, the quarterback at Wisconsin, with their third-round pick after signing Matt Flynn and having Tavares Jackson. And, you know, they flat out said he was the third – he graded as the third best player on our board. Now, you know, whatever you want to think of him, that's where we had him. And so when he's available in the third round, we took him. Obviously, the knock on Russell Wilson is he's 5'10.5", 5'11", maybe an inch shorter than Drew Brees. But if you look at his numbers at Wisconsin, they are staggering. I mean, 73% completion rate, thrown over big offensive linemen, not the most pass-oriented conference or great defensive pass defensive league. But his numbers were good, and they liked him. And so they had camp this week, and they said, you know, he is going to be in competition for the starting job. Now, I don't think that's news to Matt Flynn. Matt Flynn got a contract. He's going to make some money out of this first contract, but they can cut him without taking too big a hit. If he's on the roster next year, that's when he makes his big money. So, you know, he knows he's got to go in and compete for a job, as Tavares Jackson does too. But the point is, they said three of these Seahawks really might come in and be starting on day one. And I don't think they were including Russell Wilson in that group. But Merrill Hodge's point is, man, everybody looks good in May. They're in shorts. They're in T-shirts. You better look good in May. I mean, you're not throwing against anybody. You know, you're just throwing a receiver's running routes. And it's one of those things where fans want to get updates on players, and I may be out at the OTAs next week if I can get out there. But you're going to hear generally people say, these guys look good. They look, you know, they better look fit. They better come in shape. And, you know, they're generally look good. It's going to be hard for somebody on the sidelines to know if a guy's missing his assignment unless you know, he's getting reamed out by one of the position coaches or stuff like that. So there'll be a lot of optimism out of every camp, out of every OTA in general. But until you put the pads on, you're not going to know much. And so I guess, Dave, what I was going to add, and I thought that was a good point by Merrill Hodge. And I guess, Dave, the question I was going to ask you is, we've now talked about kind of the running back position, the feeling out process, the cornerback position. You think the Steelers, in terms of what they're going to learn from these things, you think corner's the place maybe where you'll be able to see the most, just because other than maybe jamming a guy on the line, it's more how do you turn, how do you run with guys? Will the evaluative process be the most useful for those guys, or really it's not going to make too much difference for any of the guys, and it's really be, you know, July 30th or whatever the day is that they'll learn the most?
I think when training camp opens, you know, is when you get the full test on every position on the roster. I mean, right,
of course, but do you think there's one of these positions where the, you know, it might be easier to see some things here in the OTAs or the minicamp?
I think actually the linebacker position, you know, we talked about the middle linebacker position. Can these guys, can people like Stevenson Sylvester and rookie Sean Spence get people lined up in the right position? Are they making the right reads that they're seeing from the offense to get people, not so much from a physical or a coverage type standpoint, but I think that's the biggest thing that the coaches can get from these camps and all like that. How well does a player understand where he belongs, where he lines up, you know, the offense, of course, with the new Todd Haley system, how the verbiage is being, you know, transmitted, and are people making their reads? I think that's the biggest thing that you can pick up, and I think the linebacker position is one where you'll know right away, hey, you know, this rookie is really picking these things up as far as where everybody belongs. Now, of course, to think that Sean Spence is going to start it at the buck linebacker position week one of his rookie season, but Stevenson Sylvester is a guy that I think they're really waiting to see some things, not only from a physical on the field type point of view, but how well he understands the defense in general. So I think that type of stuff is the things that you can get the most from these camps. Not so much with a cornerback turning and running with a receiver or you know, anything like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think it's obviously the non-physical positions. It's a lot easier to evaluate when you're not having contact, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, let's face it. I mean, Larry Foote knows this thing inside and out, and Keith Butler even made that known after the, you know, during his press conference after the pick of Spence, that they have no concerns about Larry Foote and his defense because he's been in it so long. Even though he was away for 1 year with the Lions, so you know, they know he's going to start the season at you know, at the starting buck position, but he also is limited as far as when you run into some of these diesel packages, these two tight end type packages like Baltimore likes to run, like New England likes to run, and all like that, which is really the hot thing in the NFL nowadays. So, you know, they're going to have people like Sylvester up to speed to come in, possibly. One thing I think we're going to see this year that we really haven't seen a lot of in the past is I think you're going to start seeing some of these middle linebackers come off the field, and other, you know, either safeties or cornerbacks come in more dime or more nickelbacker type situations than we have in the past. Now, of course, Lawrence Timmons is going to stay on the field. You know, you would hope. You know, last year he was having to play so much damn linebacker, outside linebacker position. But I think we're going to see – I think they really need Sylvester to step up this year because of that very thing. I think they don't want Larry Foote on the field in third down situations if they can help it, you know?
I totally agree, Dave. I'm not sure what all other Steeler news we have to get to. The other news around the league that was interesting is an ex-Steeler, and you and I were kind of following this reasonably closely, and I know you were retweeting some stuff from Giants camp. We had Lyman Sweet on last summer, and with the quiet summer last year, no organized activities. We had Lyman on in the middle of June or early July, I think, and he was talking about the workouts he was having in Texas and some of the things he was doing and trying to get with Ben when he had the occasion to do so. I came off as a really nice young guy, a guy that without having a rooting interest of having the best of 53 guys on the team, certainly came away from that conversation. I know we both did, hoping the best for Lymus. It didn't work out for him in Pittsburgh, and it didn't work out quickly, which was really the most surprising thing. Is he came in and he didn't make it to kind of the second preseason game, if I remember correctly. He got cut when kind of street free agents would get cut. Really disappointing, I'm sure, for him. But in the NFL, with the kind of talent he showed in college, there are a lot of people who are always willing to give another guy a chance if it doesn't cost him anything. And Lymus Sweet is one of those talents coming out of Texas where the New York Giants, when the NFL decided to go from 80 to 90, might as well bring in a lot of guys and see what you have. The Raiders brought in 30 guys and ended up signing 7 of them. The Giants brought in Lymus Sweet, and I guess he was really disappointing in his tryout, couldn't catch the ball again, and obviously was not offered a contract.
Yeah, this is a guy that, you know, the chances are running out for him. And someone asked me why, you know, at the beginning of the post, when I posted about it, I said it's tough not to root for a guy like Lymus Sweet. And someone said, well, why would you root for a guy that was a bust as a second-round pick? Hey, you know, we're all human beings here, you know. It's fun to root for the underdog, and this is a kid that just is never – yeah. I think it's a mental thing with this kid. I think it's all in his head, and you just kind of root for guys like this to at least get that part straightened out and, you know, kind of live up to some of their billing there, even if it is with another team. But he went to the Giants rookie camp this past weekend. And Mike Garofalo of the Star Ledger just said, you know, still has problems holding on to the football. You're running with other rookies out there and other undrafted guys, and you're not able to stand out, above these guys. It's pretty tough. And offensive coordinator Kevin Gilbride even said prior to the Saturday tryout for Swede that he looked rusty and in need of sharpening, and that's not the type thing that you want out there.
when you're trying to get a contract on 2 days' work, that better not be what they're saying about
him. No. And then, you know, this hits the media. Now, supposedly he's already worked out for the Bengals and the Bears and didn't get anything there. Supposedly he has a couple more tryouts lined up. But this is going to come to a screeching halt pretty soon. Maybe this kid can catch on with an arena league or something just to get us, just to learn, just to start catching the ball again and draw a paycheck.
Well, I think you're right. It's just too many guys come out every year that Lymus Sweet better find out what's next in his career.
Yeah, you better have something. I hope he didn't spend all that signing bonus and all like that. And, this guy, too, he just can't seem to stay healthy either. And last year, as you noted, I think it was a shoulder during training camp early on. And, I mean, the train wreck just – and let's face it, he couldn't help himself with the torn Achilles a couple of years ago, and you just thought, well, man, that's just one other bad break for this kid. But it is just a sad situation, and you know, makes you wonder what could have been and what, you know, what the Steelers wouldn't have now had Lymus Sweet worked out. You know, would the draft a couple of years back with Sanders – and with Antonio Brown, had that gone, you know, if Lymus Sweet had shown anything heading into that, how much of a need would have the wide receiver position have been? So it just blows your mind. Things worked out well for the Steelers, of course, and then you have Tony Clemens was drafted in the 7th round this year. But, yeah, you just got to feel bad for Lymus Sweet. But I think it's the end of the line for him. Kelvin Beachum, one last little nugget here. We had him. I had an interview with him on the podcast a few weeks ago. This kid delivered the commencement address for the class at SMU over this past weekend too. For his class, it was SMU's Simmons School of Education and Human Development. And if anybody has heard the interview that I did with Kelvin there a few weeks back, this kid is sharp as a tack. And, there's still questions, will he be able to make the 53-man roster as an extra guard? Will he make the practice squad? But let me tell you, if things don't work out in football for Kelvin Beachum, this kid is going to do just fine in the real world. So it's always fun to read about little things like that. We congratulate him for graduating and being the one to deliver the commencement address.
Yeah, that's a great point. He did. He sounded great on that, and that's nice to see a guy be really most likely, as you say, fighting for a practice squad spot. Okay, Dave. Well, we're going to come back at it Friday. Next week, we'll have a fair bit of stuff as we get into some of the OTAs with guys here. Anything you want to wrap us up with?
Yeah, we're going to try to schedule an interview with either a player or an ex-player for Friday, I think. We want some of the feedback today, too, from our listeners on give us your feedback on the depth of the tight end position. You know, like I said, or either post on the blog at Steelers Depot on that post there, or send David or I your thoughts on the depth of the tight end position. Are we off base on Leonard Pope or David Johnson? Are you concerned about the depth? Send it to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And you know, we're going to have some time here over the next few shows to read some of these things as well, too. So we'll try to get a few of those on the next episode coming up. And, yes, we know a few of you are wanting Dave Tay Thomas back on to recap the draft. Maybe next week we'll see what he's doing, see if he wants to come in and talk about the Steelers draft and maybe you know, look ahead to some things in the draft next year as well, too.
All right. Well, great stuff. Thanks again for all the donations. They keep coming in, and we're truly appreciative. You can hit the button on the SteelersDepot.com site on PayPal or David's admin at Steelers Depot.
That's correct. They want to just donate straight through PayPal. The email address to donate to is admin@SteelersDepot.com.
All right. And you can follow Dave on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow me at Hammer Speaks. You can tweet us questions. Anywhere to either of those sites or at Terrible Podcast. You can email us, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com, and we'll look forward to catching you soon. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.